This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Good morning. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is Joel Hilliker. America's public schools are being infiltrated more and more by radical racial teaching that causes young white students to feel like racist oppressors and young black students to feel like victims. We'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Rufaro Manyepa explaining how this is happening even in schools where these racial minority students are in elite private schools that cost tens of thousands of dollars a year. We'll see where this is leading. Are you concerned about climate change? The Biden-Harris administration is, and they're making it such a priority, they've unveiled a radical greenhouse gas emissions reduction plan. The trouble is, this springs from a terrible misunderstanding about what is needed to properly care for this planet we live on. We'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller explaining some important biblical truths that expose this misguided policy. And then COVID lockdowns. These have, in many cases, abridged our freedoms and moved our societies closer to authoritarianism. We've certainly seen this in America. But in some ways, the trend has been even worse in Germany. We'll hear a very concerning report about this and the way that this is playing out in this nation at the heart of Europe, a nation with a dangerous fascist past, from Trumpet writer Josue Michels. And to conclude the program, we'll look at an important question: what influence do other people have on your life? But let's start with this story about how woke education is taking over even elite private schools in America. We'll hear about this in this report from Rufaro Manyepa.
Children at Hollywood's Harvard Westlake High School are being indoctrinated in what's being called left-wing nonsense, according to an April 18th Daily Mail expose. This $43,000 a year school is home to the children of Hollywood's elite. But the new report shows that even Hollywood's left-leaning parents are increasingly frustrated by the woke changes to their school's curriculum. One mother said, "There's a growing group of parents who are desperately unhappy with how things are going, but we talk in secret." All the parents who reported to this expose did so on the condition of anonymity. And at the heart of the controversy is Harvard Westlake's new Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion program. And it is mandated that the teachers attend a training course taught by Bettina Love, a critical race theorist who believes that racism runs deep in America and blacks alone know who America really is. She also believes that schools intrinsically perpetuate anti-blackness and the spirit murder of black students. And so the curriculum is being overhauled. Instead of learning about the Treaty of Versailles and the Columbian Epoch, students are only learning about the Women's Liberation Movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. Several schools, including the expensive Harvard Westlake, have banned white literary texts such as To Kill a Mockingbird and Little Women. Even Shakespeare is close to receiving the boot. All these works have been replaced by texts such as Stamped and Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. Science and white scientists aren't safe either. Newton's laws are now simply called the three fundamental laws of physics. The Telegraph has called all of this woke weaning, and it's rapidly becoming a domineering educational ideology. And Hollywood parents, unwilling to commit career suicide, are afraid to even question it. But amidst all of this, the main victims of this education revolution are the children, both white and black. Here's what another parent said. "Now my children learn about movements, the civil rights movement, the women's liberation movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. I have no objection to any of that, but children are not getting the basic grounding. Worse, they are being fed a diet of left-wing nonsense which isn't preparing them for reality. It makes me wonder why I'm spending nearly $50,000 a year to have them indoctrinated against me. This leads to white children being indoctrinated against themselves, and black and Asian students are being encouraged to gather in quote-unquote safe groups during breaks and lunch, this inferring a safety from the white students. And such an approach is damaging to both the white students and the black students. Another mother said that her daughter said to her, "Mommy, if I'm a racist, does that mean no one will want to come to my birthday party?" And this mother says that her daughter is being educated in fear, a very dangerous path to go down. And she goes to one of the most expensive schools in Los Angeles. And the black pupils there are being taught to see themselves as victims. They're being told that they're oppressed, but they're living the most elite, charmed lives ever. Can that be good for them? And nobody is safe from this woke education revolution. Paul Rossi, a teacher at Grace Church High School, learned this very lesson. He tried to assign the writings of Glenn Lowry, Harvard's first black tenured professor of economics, to his students. He wanted to expose them to a different voice whose writings expressed a nuanced center-right position on racial issues in America. In an open letter, Paul Rossi said that the administration nixed his proposal. The head of the high school said that people like Lowry, and therefore his derived social philosophy, made him an exception to the rule that black thinkers acknowledge structural racism as the paramount impediment in society. In addition, the head of the school said that Mr. Rossi should only assign mainstream white conservatives, effectively denying black students the opportunity to hear from a black professor who holds views that diverge from the orthodoxy pushed on them. If the rich and powerful have little control over what their children are taught, what chance does the rest of America have? America is in a war of ideologies, a war that the left is winning, and parents are publicly afraid to enter the fray. And children, regardless of race, religion, creed, or sexual orientation, are the unsuspecting casualties. Amidst this ideological bloodbath, one question remains: what is the truth? Because all this anti-racist training, it is the opposite of truth. It requires that teachers treat students differently on the basis of race, allowing them to develop personalities and identities based on their race instead of on truth. This approach to education is creating two racial monoliths. It's raising up white children who view themselves as racist oppressors because they are white, and it's raising up a group of ethnic minorities who view themselves as superior while being oppressed victims. All the while, all these students are being deprived of any voices, whether white or black, that say otherwise. They are being deprived of any voices that tell the truth. And if America were as racist as children are being taught, there wouldn't be black and Asian students at Harvard Westlake High School. They wouldn't have the opportunity for such privilege. America wouldn't have the 13th Amendment. It certainly wouldn't have elected a black president for two terms, winning both the Electoral College and the popular votes by a significant margin. Many thought that having a black president would be a testament to how far America has come in solving its race issues. But here's what Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury states in his booklet, America Under Attack. If you recall, many people said having a black leader would solve our nation's racial problems. Has it? It has done the opposite. Racist accusations are flying and getting far worse each year. Every week, it seems, mainstream media and radical Democrats are talking about Republicans being racist. In almost every case, they are lying and they know they are lying. That is sick and satanic to the core. When you accuse people of racism without any proof, which most of them don't have, they just spout out the words, you're filling your country with hatred and division that leads to civil war and violence. These commentators are either ignorant of what they are doing, or they want a race war. Some extremists do want a race war, and Bible prophecy tells us that they are going to get one. Many scoff at the veracity of the Bible, but it's full of prophecies about what is to come to pass in our days. The prophet Isaiah, in particular, recorded several prophecies about what would happen to truth in the time we are living in today. Isaiah 59 verses 14 to 15 say, "And judgment is turned away backward, and justice stands afar off, for truth is fallen in the streets, and equity cannot enter. Yes, truth fails, and he that departs from evil makes himself a prey." Now, the source of this attack on truth is Satan the devil, whom John 8:44 calls the father of lies, and is the prince of the power of the air, as it says in Ephesians 2 verse 2. It's his influence on the world that is behind the lies, plaguing society, destroying our children. And many see the lies, but they're afraid to stand up for the truth, lest they make themselves a prey, as it says in Isaiah. And so the lies, they continue to spread. The division continues to grow, as do the race-fueled riots and protests. After the Baltimore riots in 2015, Mr. Flurry wrote that the rioting in Ferguson and Baltimore is just a type of what's going to happen to major cities in the entire nation, and it's a stark prophecy of our future. This nation is about to be engulfed in race riots worse than ever before. But there is good news. Mr. Flurry wrote that this world is about to see the end of all liars, racists, and hate mongers. They will soon be obliterated from this earth, and that's why Satan is in a rage, because he knows his time is running out. There is hope for this world. The lies, they are going to get a lot worse before they get better. But soon, there will be lies no longer. The true word of the Bible declares that fact. To learn about this truth, to learn about a world without lies, racism, and violence, please request our free booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like.
Thank you very much, Rufaro. It is interesting how what a conflict there must be in the minds of these individuals who are attending these very pricey private institutions. And you brought out very well just the strangeness of the fact that they're considering themselves victims despite the privilege that they enjoy every day.
Yeah, it's incredible that people who get to go to a school that costs, a high school that costs $50,000 a year, can think that they're oppressed or be taught that they're oppressed. You know, one of the things that the parents were saying is that, you know, my children are being taught that America is bad. You're bad because you're white. Capitalism is bad. But the school itself exists because of capitalism. Without right. capitalism, nobody can afford to send their children to a school that's worth that much money. And in many cases, it actually soars to about $70,000, because when you take in the fact that there's donations, there's extracurricular activities, and there's even a small circle of elite parents within the elite school that donate regularly up to $90,000 a year to the school. And yet there's this idea that everything that you come from is bad, and so we need to tear it down. The hypocrisy of that is rankling with a lot of these parents. And I think it's telling that, you know, Hollywood is predominantly leftist. But even here, these parents are thinking, something's not right here. Yep. And if it's something that can happen in Hollywood among the left, this recognition of these inconsistencies, you can be guaranteed that it will spread to all of America.
Well, you brought out just how much this hurts society, how divisive this is when you have, you know, a large subset of the people within your society who are convinced that the society that they've grown up in is actually harmful and toxic. But you look at even on the individual level, telling someone you're a victim when really they're... Anybody can look at circumstances in their life and conclude that they're a victim in some form or other. That's a very common ailment in our human nature that wants to play the victim rather than stepping out and saying, I am capable, I am powerful, I can actually accomplish a lot. That's a really dangerous trap to set for someone to tell them that.
It really is a dangerous trap. It's a sort of mental subjugation that these children are being instilled in, particularly the black students and the ethnic minorities in these schools, because when you're fed something that human nature just tends towards naturally, you're going to grab onto that with everything. And that just makes something which is already difficult, you know, rising above and achieving is already difficult. But then when you're told that everything around you is geared against that, what's the point of even fighting against it at that point? What's the point of trying to embrace everything that America is supposed to stand for? You know, grabbing yourself up by your bootstraps and making something of yourself. And that's really damaging. And you think that the fact that it's effective for people who have so much wealth, for black students who have so much wealth, what does this say for all the other ones, the rags to riches stories that we've heard over the years? Are we even going to have that anymore? Or is everyone just going to be stuck where they are because they're being educated and things like this?
Yeah, those rags to riches stories really make up the fabric of America. That's just something that's kind of been instilled within most Americans, and you know, it's kind of who we are as a people in a lot of ways, and that's a great point. What happens to the next generation that really could make a lot of themselves if they made the effort? We've been talking with trumpet writer Rufaro Manyepa about how woke education is taking over even elite private schools in America. He's written an article titled "Hollywood is Getting Schooled in Wokeness." You can find that at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, sir.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
The Biden-Harris administration says it wants to stop climate change, but the ways it is working to realize this goal are fraught with contradictions and conundrums, as we will now hear in this report from Andrew Miller.
Last month, people around the world celebrated Earth Day, or as the United Nations has recently rebranded it, International Mother Earth Day. Leaders around the world use the occasion to implore people to make peace with nature and do everything in your power to tackle climate change. And by tackle climate change, they meant reduce greenhouse gas emissions. In America, the Biden-Harris administration practically used the occasion as a debutante ball to unveil its radical greenhouse gas reduction plan. At a virtual conference attended by 40 heads of state, Joe Biden pledged to slash United States greenhouse gas emissions to at least 50% of 2005 levels by 2030. That goal is nearly double the emissions reduction target set by the Obama-Biden administration. And it is well beyond what America can realistically achieve without either offshoring a huge chunk of its greenhouse gas-emitting industries to nations that do not care about how much carbon they emit, like China, or massively expanding America's nuclear energy industry. And since most liberals hate nuclear energy, it's safe to assume they will choose the former option. Solar and wind power are still too variable to serve as baseload power generation, as last summer's rolling blackouts in California attest. Biden was vague about how his administration plans to accomplish slashing greenhouse gas emissions so dramatically. But his national climate advisor, Gina McCarthy, told NPR,
"We are talking about an opportunity to advance our transportation sector by investing in electric vehicles and battery manufacturing here in the United States, both for vehicles, but also for battery storage opportunities. We're talking about building a new resilient grid."
But recharging the batteries of electric vehicles produces almost as much carbon dioxide as driving a gasoline-powered vehicle, if the electric grid is powered by fossil fuels. In fact, a study by the IFO think tank in Munich found that electric vehicles in Germany emitted 11 to 28% more carbon dioxide than their diesel counterparts, when you considered the carbon dioxide emissions linked to the production of these vehicles' batteries. So Biden's infrastructure plan is more of an excuse to buy rare earth minerals from China than it is a legitimate plan to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions. Donald Trump noted on March 31st that Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure plan is built on ludicrous tax hikes designed to send U.S. manufacturing jobs to China. Mr. Trump said, "Joe Biden's radical plan to implement the largest tax hike in American history is a massive giveaway to China and many other countries that will send thousands of factories, millions of jobs, and trillions of dollars to these competitive nations. The Biden plan will crush American workers and decimate U.S. manufacturing while giving special tax privileges to outsourcers, foreign, and giant multinational corporations." The Biden-Harris administration may end up achieving its pledge to slash U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, but global greenhouse gas emissions will continue to rise as China manufactures the solar panels and electric car batteries needed to power the Green New Deal being pushed by U.S. oligarchs. When you look into who is behind the Biden-Harris climate change agenda, you realize the real issue here is government control. America's political and corporate elite see China's massive workforce as the linchpin of a new economic order, and they are willing to tell people almost anything to convince them that America needs to offshore its manufacturing base to Asian nations. In his article, What the Paris Climate Change Agreement Was Really About, Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury noted, "Climate change has become something like a religion for the radical left. They believe it as an article of faith, regardless of the evidence. It's a tool they're using to increase their control." Scientific fraud abounds when it comes to proving man-made climate change, because the government officials financing climate change research are more interested in power than in science. If the Biden-Harris administration really wanted to be good stewards of the planet, it would forget about micromanaging emissions of carbon dioxide, which is a necessary ingredient for life, and start conserving America's topsoil. Soil degradation may be the greatest environmental threat facing humanity, and satellite imaging reveals that America's Corn Belt has lost about a third of its topsoil due to industrial farming techniques. Yet America continues to plant 36 million acres of corn earmarked for ethanol production. This ethanol is mixed with gasoline to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide emitted into the atmosphere by vehicles. So you could say that America is deliberately sacrificing its soil on an altar of false environmentalism. The ironic thing is that ecologist Alan Savory has demonstrated that proper grassland management based on holistic grazing has the potential to reduce atmospheric carbon to pre-industrial levels by increasing plant growth in the world's deserts. So the liberals are wrong about cow flatulence being a threat to the planet. Proper grassland management would enrich the world's soils to such an extent that the resulting plant growth would sequester more carbon than humans have emitted since 1850. This is a game-changing discovery, but it should not come as a shock to those familiar with biblical agriculture laws. The Bible does not have much to say about fossil fuels, but it has a lot to say about soil management. One Old Testament law that critics mock is the land Sabbath. God tells people to let their land rest from crop production every 7 years. In Leviticus 25, verses 2 through 4, it says, "Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when you shall come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 years you will sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather all the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard." So during this land Sabbath, no crops can be sown or sold. Nothing can be harvested except what people pick from their own personal gardens for their own consumption. Grain stored during the previous 6 years can be sold, but the land Sabbath discriminates against landowners who rely solely on crops for their income. And this is a major reason God instituted this law. Growing crops is good, but if not controlled, it becomes a lethal weapon against the soil. The December 1971 issue of the Your Living Environment series, produced by the Agriculture Department of Ambassador College in Bricketwood, England, said, "The land Sabbath uses the sheer power of economics to encourage farmers to adopt a diversified program based on livestock and the production of meat, milk, eggs, wool, etc. It encourages grassland farming, the feeding and fattening of livestock on grass, rather than excessive dependence on cereal grains as animal feed. It discourages excessive dependence on crops that require annual sowing and harvesting. And it encourages small vegetable gardens diversified and intensively managed." Interestingly enough, by encouraging just such a program, God induces farmers to adopt the ideal fertility building methods. So instead of robbing soil nutrients until the land turns to desert, God's agriculture laws ensure that the soil is rejuvenated at least once every 7 years by the microbe-rich manure of grazing herds. There is a reason God promised the Israelites a land flowing with milk and honey. Where there is milk, there are cattle. Where there is honey, there are bees. And both cattle and bees are keystone species to a healthy grassland ecosystem with carbon-rich soil and vibrant plant life. God molded the first human out of humus and gave his family stewardship over the planet. He provided humans with instructions on how to sustain their environment, including these two overarching principles: dress and keep the garden. Yet humans have selflessly depleted the soil and failed to take care of the planet. The Bible tells us a time is coming when the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. In fact, the carbon dioxide emissions have already made the world a greener place by fertilizing plant growth in the world's desert regions and in the high Arctic. But this prophecy will not ultimately be fulfilled until people learn to stop robbing the soil and start obeying God's agriculture laws so a healthy and vibrant ecosystem can be sustained indefinitely.
Thank you very much for that, Andrew. I think the point that you brought out about how the leftists who are ostensibly so concerned about greenhouse gas emissions also seem to be so unconcerned about China administering or producing more greenhouse gases. There was just a report last week from a New York-based research firm that said that China, in 2019, they emitted more greenhouse gases than the United States and all other developed countries combined. Yet the leftists seem completely unconcerned about that.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating angle because, I mean, even just on the surface, you look at that, you're like, all right, well, these deals like the Paris Climate Change deal, they hold the U.S. to a very high standard, right. But they don't hold China to a high standard. And so you can just say, well, we should be pressuring, if you really cared about the environment, you should be pressuring China to clean up its act. But it really goes even a little deeper than that because, like, when you look at how much greenhouse gas China is emitting, a lot of their greenhouse gases are generated manufacturing goods that they sell here. And so in some ways, it's kind of like you've really just offshored your own greenhouse gas to another nation and then bought what they produced. So really...
And a country that isn't as concerned about those emissions as we are, so it's right. Actually worse.
So really, those carbon emissions should be put on America's tab.
Yeah,
I saw a report that said, like, in the case of, like, Great Britain, like, Britain brags a lot about how much it's cut its greenhouse gas emissions. But they said in Great Britain's case, by the time you look at the amount of greenhouse gases produced in nations manufacturing things that get sold in Britain Britain's greenhouse gas tab is actually worse than it used to be before all these climate change deals were made. America, we have done some like smokestack filtering technologies that have cleaned up our act a little bit, even counting what we buy from other nations. But the improvement has not been nearly as much as you thought, which does lead you to believe, if you have a bit of a suspicious mind, that some of these big CEOs of these multinational corporations know that this isn't helping the planet at all. And they're just doing this as a way to offshore their industries or convince the U.S. government to let them offshore their industries to countries that where they can hire workers they don't have to pay.
Well, it's not an unreasonable conclusion to draw when you just look at the facts and you see how much the policies that are being enacted go directly contrary to the plain facts that are available for anyone to see. We've been talking with trumpet writer Andrew Miller about the Biden-Harris administration's misguided efforts to prevent climate change. He's written an article, Joe Biden's Earth Day Folly. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. And we appreciate your time, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
COVID lockdowns. These have, in many cases, abridged our freedoms and moved our societies closer to authoritarianism. We've certainly seen this in America. But in some ways, the trend has been even worse in Germany. We'll hear a very concerning report about this and the way that this is playing out in this nation at the heart of Europe, a nation with a dangerous fascist past, from trumpet writer Josue Michels.
If you disagree with the government's coronavirus response in Germany, you can now be put under surveillance. Germany's Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution announced on April 28th, quote, "Our basic democratic order, as well as the state institutions such as parliaments and governing bodies, have faced multiple attacks since the beginning of the measures to contain the COVID-19 pandemic," end of quote. For this reason, Germany's domestic secret service has put the Querdenker or lateral thinkers movement under nationwide surveillance for the demonstrations against the coronavirus prevention measures. No matter your views on the effectiveness of the lockdowns, the way Germany is treating dissenting voices is most concerning. According to Spiegel Online's information, the German government sees the movement as responsible for causing an anti-democratic and/or security-endangering delegitimization of the state. This is quite a vague description to silence government critics. Already in mid-April, German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer warned that, quote, the tendency among us, also in the Office for the Protection of the Constitution, is more in the direction of declaring this scene an object of observation, end of quote. Spiegel Online wrote, quote, surveillance can also involve intelligence means, such as observing meetings or intercepting emails. The bank accounts of coronavirus deniers and financial flows between conspiracy supporters can also be screened, end of quote. The nationwide observance includes other groups beyond just lateral thinkers and include any deniers or conspiracy supporters. Such surveillance has been used on far left and right-wing extremists, as well as Islamists who pose a terrorist threat. But this movement doesn't quite fit into any of the previous established categories. The movement drew support from all kinds of different backgrounds. Here's one example of what the people are protesting against. On Wednesday, April 21st, the German Bundestag passed an amended Infection Protection Act by the Bundestag. Prior to the vote, fraction leader of the Christian Democratic Union, Ralf Brinkhaus, told parliamentarians, quote, if there's no law today, people will die. This law is a law for life. Vote for it, vote for life. End of quote. But a law is not quite as simple as voting between life and death. In fact, the law takes power to enforce lockdowns away from the states and centralizes it in Berlin. Germany's constitution has previously not allowed this. Germany's most popular newspaper Bild called the new law a black hour for freedom. The new law will be enforced until June 30th. But the Constitutional Court is already receiving complaints about it. Some see it as an unprecedented power grab in modern Germany that sets a dangerous precedent on how Berlin could force its will on states in the future. The law is not only controversial from a legal standpoint, but also affects the lives of millions of Germans. While the law was being passed, 8,000 people protested in front of the Reichstag's building in Berlin. But what happened next are not scenes you would expect from a country that is supposed to be a democratic role model. The protesters were soon confronted by police forces for not abiding by social distancing measures. Voices over loudspeakers demanded that the protesters leave the demonstration site. A large contingent of 2,200 police officers ended up clashing with the protesters. Over 150 protesters were arrested. Germany is doing its best to discourage protests. Not only are demonstrations banned if social distancing isn't obeyed, but protesters are even treated as an enemy of the state. In reference to Stalinism, historian Leonard Shapiro warned that the true object of propaganda is neither to convince nor even to persuade, but to produce a uniform pattern of public utterance in which the first trace of unorthodox thought reveals itself as a jarring dissonance. End of quote. That's what we see in Germany today. Millions of people believe that the lockdowns forced on the world are a disaster. They don't necessarily deny the existence of the coronavirus, but they believe the crisis has been abused by the government to expand its power and suppress the people. If you have those thoughts, however, the government wants you to believe that you are alone or in the company of right-wing radicals. You may even find yourself under surveillance. When asked about the protesters at the Reichstag's building, spokesman of the domestic policy of the Free Democrats, Konstantin Kuhle, said, if you promote that Germany is on the way to dictatorship or something similar, that's not acceptable. If you do believe that, then Kuhle said, you share common ground with extremist tendencies that have nothing good in mind. To say that anyone who criticizes Berlin's recent power grab is joining forces with extremists is a dangerous argument to delegitimize citizens' concerns. Furthermore, it is outrageous to point to government-paid scientists or the government-funded World Health Organization to dismiss all dissenting voices. But because the Querdenker movement has been criticized by millions of citizens who support the lockdowns, we shouldn't expect too much backlash against the government's surveillance. Nonetheless, this is an alarming development. In essence, the German government is saying that if you claim Germany's coronavirus response leads to dictatorship, we will try to silence you. Yet the Bible reveals that Germany's response to the coronavirus and its dictatorial tendencies need to be closely watched. In Coronavirus and the Holy Roman Empire, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote, quote, "One of the most important effects of the global panic over COVID-19 has been almost overlooked. Europe's response to the pandemic is accelerating the fulfillment of one of the most crucial end-time prophecies of your Bible." The Bible reveals that Europe's leaders will only become more dictatorial. Revelation 17 prophesies that we are about to see the rise of 10 kings or authoritarian leaders. In verse 12 to 13 we read, "And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." What we currently see happening in Germany is preparing the way for these dictatorships to form. Mr. Fleury wrote, "The Bible says 10 kings will rise in Europe in this end time, led by one overarching strongman. These kings will form the Holy Roman Empire." The coronavirus pandemic is helping usher in these 10 kings. End of quote. Continue watching Europe as its democracies move closer and closer to becoming dictatorships.
Well, thank you very much, Josue. Seeing this story play out in Germany is especially concerning. There were several elements of your report that I think were very striking. One was that quote from Leonard Shapiro talking about the purpose of propaganda. It's not trying to convince, it's not trying to persuade, it's just trying to create this uniform pattern of public utterances where if anyone departs from that, then there's a dissonance there. And I think we can all relate to that, even in what's happening in America right now, where you get the same message from politicians, from the media, even if it's wildly different from your own experience or from what the facts show. But it's all so uniform. It's really interesting how common it is for people to just jump on board with that. Other things that you were mentioning, these politicians that are basically saying, if you suggest that Germany is going the way of a dictatorship, that is just absolutely unacceptable. I think in some ways Americans can relate even to this to some degree, where you're branded an extremist just for raising objections, which is it's very unusual for this country. But I think to look at this trend in light of Germany's history shows how easy it is for people to follow this kind of a course.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because Germany right now basically says, we are a democracy. You don't have to worry about us not being a democracy. We actually protect democracy. And if you disagree, then you are the danger to democracy, so we need to suppress you. But if you look at just how Hitler came to power, he basically just suppressed every voice that spoke against him. He suppressed the communists, he suppressed even Christians that spoke against him. Just anyone from the left to the right that spoke against him was suppressed. And then he used the media perfectly to make one single voice heard that the government is doing the right thing and that you don't have to worry about anything. And that's what you see in Germany today. The media at large agrees with the lockdown measures. And most citizens read the media, they hear the government. They think the lockdowns are the right things. They look to the scientists say the same things. No matter where you look in public, everyone says lockdowns are the right thing. You see that it's not working. So you think, well, maybe I'm just wrong. And that's what the narrative they want to be creating here is, that you just shouldn't think for yourself. Just look to the government. They have it all under control. And if you see someone criticizing it, at best report him to the government. They will take care of him.
And your sense is that there really isn't like a dissenting voice in the media. Are there like, say, in the United States, there are media outlets, even though they're kind of outside of the mainstream, that do speak out against the coronavirus measures and some of the authoritarian type moves that we're seeing from the government. Does Germany have the equivalent of something like that in its media?
Not in its established, well, reputable media. I noticed that Bild sometimes speaks out against the lockdowns or just says there's a different picture here, but then it gets criticized for doing even that. And I think the even more concerning thing is, if you look at the political spectrum, like a voter doesn't really have a choice to vote for someone that is against the lockdowns. The only party that would be in that category is the AfD, the German far-right party that has neo-Nazi connections. So there's not really a choice for a German citizen except to go on the street and protest, and they are against that. So there's not much German citizens can look to for guidance in any way or any solution to get out of this.
It's quite remarkable. We appreciate you bringing that to us. We've been talking with trumpet writer Josue Michels about the increasingly dictatorial way that the German government and German media are treating those who would criticize the way that the government is handling its coronavirus measures. He's written an article called In Dictatorial Fashion, Germany Suppresses Coronavirus Deniers. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much, Josue.
Thanks for having me again.
It's time for today's last word.
Influence. Influence is the effect that people have on other people. In life, we're all influenced by others, and we influence others. Good and bad influences are all around us. I want to challenge you to spend some time thinking about the influence others have on you. Whether we like to admit it or not, we're all influenced by the people around us. This can be positive or negative, depending on your own personality and your approach and the people that you spend time around. A family member or a friend might push you to work harder, to overcome a bad habit. You might be inspired by someone else's positive example. You might learn from others' experiences. Even reading books about great people can influence you positively. And negative examples of people influencing others abound all around us and all through human history. God says a lot about this subject. He knows how profound influence can be, good or bad. Proverbs 13 and verse 20 says, "He that walks with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." So it makes a big difference who we spend time with. And this proverb is telling us we've got to think about the influence that others are having on us. Think about what they stand for. Think about what they represent, what direction they're heading in life. Are they wise or are they fools? Do they help you become wise or do they make you foolish? Your character is shaped by the company you keep. It can make you wise or it can turn you into a fool. And sometimes it's not necessarily the individual himself, the difference can be in what you do together, what you talk about with that individual, depending on how much you're trying to do things right versus just going with the flow of your human nature. The way that you handle it can make the difference between a particular relationship being positive or negative. You can influence each other toward wisdom or toward foolishness. So think about that. Do your friends and family help you to become a better person? Do they make you want to work harder, to stretch yourself in positive ways? When you're around them, are you more of the person you want to be or the person that you're trying to become? Or do you tend to become more comfortable with your human nature and things that you shouldn't be comfortable with? We all have to be honest about the fact that we can be influenced by others, because there's something else about our human nature is that it doesn't want to admit this. We like to think that we're above being led around and influenced by others. We want to think that we're our own person. We make up our own mind. Well, God says, actually, that's not entirely so. You're influenced a lot more than you think. Another proverb that you can look at to underscore this point, Proverbs 22, verses 24 through 25 say, "Make no friendship with an angry man or a hot-tempered person. And with a furious man you shall not go, lest you learn his ways and get a snare to your soul." Obviously, we should be civil to everybody. But to associate too closely with someone with this kind of weakness in their character, that's going to affect you. And the influence rarely goes in the other direction. It's generally the negative that tends to spread. Think about people who are given to a lot of drama. Maybe they're easily offended or very touchy, or they try to manipulate other people, or they're very careless about what they say to other people. They get into gossip and other negative forms of communication. If you tolerate that and you spend time around that, well, the chances are you are going to pick that up. So again, it's important to be really aware about the behavior of the people around you, especially those closest to you, and the influence they're having on you. It's really common sense that you tend to take on the character of the people you associate with. And yet, sadly, most people don't even think really about the quality of their friends or how they influence them. Think about why the people we associate with have such an influence on us. The answer lies in our human nature. Now, I've used that term a couple of times. Let's just focus on that for a bit. The author of human nature is Satan the devil. Herbert W. Armstrong described the essence of Satan's way of thinking with one word. He said that it was the essence of sin and the essence of human nature. And what is that? He said the one word was vanity. Vanity can be really hard to see in ourselves unless we really know what we're looking for, and God helps us to see that. But vanity shows up in a lot of different ways. And one major way is that we want to be liked. We want to be well thought of by other people. Now, that can be helpful in some ways as you're just learning how to get along with people and learning just basic rules of etiquette and consideration for other people. But it can cause serious problems. And the reason for that is, and this is really another super important lesson about human nature, we are embarrassingly prone to prioritize other people's opinions over God's opinion. Human nature wants to be liked. You know, we don't want to be thought of as an outsider or an oddball, so we tend to go along. Mr. Armstrong wrote this in The Missing Dimension in Sex: "People are like sheep. They all follow the leader to the slaughter, but they don't know they're being led to the slaughter. They're just a little stupid. Yes, quite a little, but they still want to belong. It's natural to just go with the group." Now, you see this really all over in our world today because of this tendency in human nature. Otherwise, smart people can get into doing really stupid things just to please the people around them. It's important to evaluate ourselves. Are there areas you have found yourself going along with something you knew was wrong, because you just wanted to follow what someone else was doing. If you don't have strong convictions, you can get swept up in all kinds of nonsense. And you can actually convince yourself that you want to do those things because you don't have the guts to admit that you're just following the crowd. Who is running your life? Who is making your choices? That's a job that you really can't afford to delegate to people who don't know what they're doing. You can't let other people, you can't let your peers run your life and allow them to influence you negatively to get into things that you know better than to do. And it's a whole lot more common than we realize. But the clearer you recognize your own human nature, your own vanity, the easier it'll be for you to recognize when it's leading you down the wrong path. In Exodus 23 and verse 2, God commands, "You shall not follow a multitude to do evil." God's law forbids just going along with the crowd. But that's human nature. God wants us to be strong, strong enough to resist going along with the crowd into evil. He wants his people to be leaders, people with initiative, people with the courage to stand for what is right, even when that means confronting problems or standing alone. Be aware of the influence others have on you. Choose your companions wisely. Never follow the crowd into evil, and be willing to stand alone for God. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Rufaro Manyepa, Andrew Miller, and Josue Michels. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Mark Twain. The man who does not read good books has no advantage over the man who cannot read them. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.